If you're betting March Madness, you should be doing it at MyBookie. This is the best betting stretch of the year. Upsets, buzzer beaters, and if you're going to take your shot, you might as well take it where the payouts hit harder. Only at MyBookie, you've got the money bag. Money bag gives you boosted odds and juiced payouts on select games. Same picks, bigger potential returns. When you're staring at that Sweet 16 matchup or loading up a Final Four play, MyBookie can turn a good hit into a great one. This isn't the week to sit back and wait. Lines are moving, futures are tightening. The edge is right now. Head to mybookie.ag, use code NBASZN, and get your first bet covered up to $500. If it misses, just activate your bet back bonus token and run it back. March only comes once. Bet it smart, bet it big. Only at MyBookie.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Thursday, March 19th, the year of our Lord, 2026. This is Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Happy Thursday. Happy first official day of March Madness. Or unofficial day, I guess. Officially, the thing started Tuesday. I don't know what they're going to do if they expand this tournament, which I'm totally against. And there's all these games all week. I just think some things you have to keep the same. You know, when there's no reason to change other than money and diminishing the product. You know, if you have a good product, I've found that, you know, if you look around most of the time, if you have a good product, the value goes up. I think sometimes it's when the focus, and this is applicable through life, the world, companies, Southwest Airlines comes to mind. When the financial end of it overrides everything else, the quality at times does diminish in the interest of profit and whatever. And look, business is business. You do have to make money, but I think the money takes care of itself if you focus on the quality. And that's just a little bit of advice for our folks in Indianapolis who are morons, you know, who've proven. I mean, we used to just say that, well, the NCAA is a bunch of morons, and now it's proven out in real time, hasn't it, folks? So anyway, don't expand the NCAA tournament, morons. That's the thing there. Although, I mean, if you're South Carolina and you're in a power conference, then it's easier to get in the tournament, right? But I'm just against that. The Gamecocks need to take care of business, and they'll get in the 68-team field or whatever. And I'm a Derek Scott, go back to 64. Anyway, we have a bracket challenge on ITG. You can go to at Gamecock Show on X and find that link. Certainly welcome everybody to come in. You get a big gift certificate if you win and some Chief Sports gear. We probably will expand that next year. We had a bigger one last year. We had a couple going. And this year, not so much. But certainly for those of you that celebrate March Madness and take the day off or whatever, if you had to Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever with your buddies, or you're out in Vegas, like I think Matt Anderson is on a trip with his buddies. He'd go every year for March Madness. He won't be on the show on Friday. Check that out. Speaking of Matt, just dropped last night. If you want help filling out your bracket from some people that know, the Late Night Gamecock Show does have a March Madness bracket analysis preview. You know, Matt knows the KenPom. He knows the metrics. He can help you pick those special upsets. So check that out. It's on their podcast channel. Also on our YouTube page. You can go to Spotify or Apple and get that. Please subscribe to that. Rate that show 5 stars. Make that part of your podcast listening. The morning show, Matt Smith, Smitty, will be back in, according to what he said yesterday at the end of the show with Jamie Bradford. I'm sure there'll be more baseball talk. They're probably going to get into the tournament quite a bit, too. And I think he has some other guests lined up. And then it's Smorgasbord Day with Alex Jones, another late-night Gamecock Show contributor from thebigspur.com. He will be in to chat it up with Phil and I about spring practice, baseball, all that good stuff. Shout out to Ashley Chastain Woodard and the softball team for winning last night. Baseball, obviously, is practicing. They got Arkansas this weekend, and we'll preview all of that here in the coming days, especially tomorrow with Stuart Lake and Jamie on the morning show. So spring football practice continues. The work continues. Back on the field yesterday for the first time since spring break. And I think we didn't do a good enough job of explaining it was spring break and the football team was off. Just to the masses, because I got, you know, a couple of messages and emails about, oh, we're not learning anything about the football team. Well, they were off. And it's weird. It's kind of like basketball, man. When they get into December, they'll have a couple of games, and some of them are power conference games, and then, boom, there's exams, and you're off. And then, you know, you have a couple of games, probably one power conference game, and then, boom, you're off and play Presbyterian or Newberry right before New Year's. And then you get into SEC play. Kind of like that with spring practice a lot of the time. Sometimes coaches, Beamer's done this before, will wait till after spring break to get it all in, and then it's constant. Sometimes it's a couple, and then the break, and then they come back. It just depends on the year. But just kind of listening to, you know, some of the press conferences with players, things seem to be going well. Yesterday, you know, and also checking behind the scenes, you know, one thing that's significant that Fred Johnson, you guys know him, the president of the Fred Johnson fan club, big linebacker, returning starter, high upside guy, needs to be more consistent. I think he knows that. 6'4", 238 pounds runs. I mean, he's how you draw him up. And when he's on, he's really on. And we remember the Virginia Tech game against his home state school. I think at that point, everybody kind of thought, well, he's just going to be a big-time player this year. But as happens sometimes with younger players, especially at that position, get a little inconsistent. And this is Justin Okoronkwo's up and Fred's not. And then Sean Murphy, half the year was not up. And then the last half of the year, and he's another guy that's been showing some leadership. And Clayton White mentioned this about the linebackers. They're all older and kind of the most experienced group at South Carolina. And so they're going to kind of carry the team. And I think if you're looking for a positive comparison, if you think about the leaders in the linebacker room in 2024, Debo Williams, obviously, and then Demetrius Knight, obviously, he was the leader of the entire team. Bam Martin Scott played a big part in that as well. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on there with Fred Johnson. But he was asked about it, and Clayton White's been talking about him taking more of a leadership role since last year. So that's good news from the intangible standpoint, which includes leadership. And this is going to be one of those topics that I think maybe eats the skin off my face a little bit. Just because of my personal preference, I think sometimes it's like when you win, everybody talks about what good leadership you have. When you lose, there's a leadership problem, you know. I do think that exists, though. It's not a you know, a cartoon or a fantasy that you can ask any coach, you know. And I think that's, you know, kind of the difference between coaches and you know, folks in the media or whatever. Sometimes is that those intangibles, you know, they see it a little bit more because they're around the players every day, and that makes sense. But it's just something I'm like, you know, I'd rather kind of talk about what you know, what players are doing well and, you know, what players are not and who needs some work and stuff like that, because I'm a big player junkie. That's just me. I'm not saying anybody's wrong, but I want to say that because this is going to come up the whole offseason, leadership, leadership, leadership. And Shane Beamer mentioned it on his podcast interview with Connor O'Gara the other day, when they asked him what went wrong, that's the first thing he said. Now, I think there's some other things that obviously went wrong, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And Beamer did say that. But, you know, he mentioned close games in the fourth quarter, you need leadership to pull those out. And that's absolutely correct. When you talk about culture, you talk about leadership, that kind of thing – That shows when things get tough, right? When it's all on the line, when butts get tight, right? And you have to have culture, leadership, and perseverance, excuse me, to get through that kind of thing and to come out successful. That's a fact of life. And culture and leadership and all that stuff, it doesn't mean you're going to go out and blow everybody away. I've seen teams that, get on a roll. They're kind of front runners and blow everybody out. And then the minute they get challenged, they wilt. And that team is a good team, but they didn't have the leadership they needed. And culture. Indiana. There you go. There's an example of all that. And with Indiana, I'll continue to maintain it's not some magical thing that, oh, these guys aren't very good, but we'll sprinkle some leadership on them. No, that's a good football team. They had good players. It was clear. all that good stuff. Receivers could jump and run, and backs ran fast and hard, line blocked, quarterback was elite, But I don't know why we continue in this sport sometimes to value things that aren't actual football games. Oh, he was just lightly recruited, so ergo he may not must know. No, I mean it's the heavily recruited guys hit at a higher rate. True. That doesn't mean the lower recruited guy is some miracle. It just means with the way this sport is in 2022, when some of these guys came out of high school, not too many of them these days, there was one list of ranking, the guys top to bottom, and then some you missed and came out of nowhere and stuff. But then that changes, and that changes every single year. Changes in the NFL, the top players, right? So anyway, that's my little side rant on that. But Beamer talked about that and talked about being young, and they were in some spots, and even mentioned that he didn't think he did a good enough job getting older guys in. Well, that's different this year, obviously, because his portal class is ancient. These guys were pretty old. I mean, they're older dudes. And I think that's good, but I also think guys like Fred Johnson, who are going into their third year, that can take ownership of the program, that are experienced within the program, need to do that. And that's something Clayton White's been talking about since last year. And I think it's overwhelmingly positive because you can't really be a leader and not be good, right? Spurrier used to say that. He said, man, these guys, they'd bounce around and yell all the time. It's like, well, and they weren't even playing. It's like, well, you need to just kind of be quiet. Old Steve Spurrier told it like it was. So much truth that he said. And so I think that's good because I think if that's where Fred goes, I think that's probably a reflection of what he expects of himself as a player. And linebacker's hard, when you're inexperienced because, your job is to dissect and not take false steps and do a lot naturally. And a lot laterally too. It's not a straightforward position. That's why the 40 time, is good because of closing speed and things like that. But when I used to do linebackers, I loved the shuttle. Brandon Spikes, great linebacker, right? Shelby, North Carolina, played at Florida with the Patriots. 4'8" in the 40, and some of my colleagues wanted to move him to defensive end as a recruit, or he's a D end. But you look at his shuttle, it was like 3'9". So it didn't matter. And boy, he was good, right? Brandon Spikes, nobody would say he wasn't good. And so I think that was very positive, what Fred said about that. Right said Fred. Anybody remember? Right said Fred. Anyway, getting into the jokes this morning or my feeble attempt at humor on coffee. Coffee is not humorous. It's just straightforward most of the time. But that's pretty positive. So we have an offensive line-ish look. I want to just talk about this because I know you're interested. This is the group that went out first. I don't think you can say these are the projected starters, although I think it may be an idea. And I think that's just kind of what it is. It's an idea. These are the guys that Randy Clements and Kendall Briles and Shane Beamer and everybody who's involved with the offensive line, Jason Smith, they're all kind of just looking at this. And this is how they lined up first. Left tackle, Seth Smith. We've talked about Seth Smith from Northern Arizona. As soon as Peak's injury happened, it's the first guy I thought of. He started a bunch at left tackle for the Lumberjacks. He's a sixth-year guy. He's out of Phoenix. 6'4", 307. Look good. Eyeball test, good-looking kid. Or, I'm sorry, young man, because he's not a kid anymore. Don't know. You know, watching him on film, there's got to be an adjustment from FCS to the SEC, obviously, but it's been done before. He's athletic enough. You know, is he Jakarius Peak? No. But is he a guy that can step in and possibly perform better than Josiah Thompson did last year? Yes, because Josiah really struggled. Would I project him in the NFL draft as high as Josiah Thompson in time? Absolutely not. But I think, you know, again, it's going to be 5-1. You know, 5 playing is 1. So if he can go out there and do that, that's fine. And then they get Peak back. Who knows what will happen? But Seth Smith, left tackle. Left guard's Hank Purvis. A little bit surprising. Now, I will say this. Hale McGranahan, who I tend to mention a lot, on the bigspur.com, when they got Purvis, he reported left guard for him. Well, then we did all this research. Jamie Bradford did it, and I looked at it and went back and kind of heard. I don't even know if I heard it. I mean, I'm just like projecting based on data. Because at the time, Purvis was 6'5", 360. And in this system, your right guard is significantly bigger than your left. It's just how it goes. Left guard was around 310, 315, I think, 320-ish. Well, lo and behold, Hank Purvis has lost 30 pounds from allegedly his weight listed at Purdue, which was 360, and his weight now, which is 330. And, you know, Hale was accurate. Left guard, that's where he's lining up. Purdue transfer, he's at UNLV, followed Barry Odom to Purdue. A guy that when you look back at his career at with the Running Rebels and with the Boilermakers, he's a player that during in season, he's got better and better and better. And this is a two-star kid out of Kansas. Huge. But you watch him, and he's, you know, Beamer talks about playing with an edge. Kendall Browse talks about getting five of the baddest dudes. He's a very physical player, very physical on the inside. So he's at left guard, another physical player. No surprise who the center is. It's Carter Miller, the UCF transfer. Really like him. Really, I'm hesitant to go gaga over the center because you heard a lot of great things about Boaz Stanley last year. Even ESPN reported Boaz would be, and it just didn't happen for him, right? A lot of that was he was swimming mentally, in my opinion, the entire year. Maybe as bad as any player swimming mentally that's not a quarterback or a linebacker that I've ever seen. And he was the center. I mean, it was just unprecedented, the mistakes and all that good stuff. Well, he's at Purdue now, so I guess you traded him for Hank Purvis. So I'm hesitant to go all in, but Carter Miller's a different kind of guy. This is a different offense. I mean, I don't think a lot of people grasp the amount of mental stuff that last year's offensive line, really for the last couple of years, were asked to kind of grasp this. I mean, there are assignments, don't get me wrong, but it seems to be like, just go get where you need to be and kick somebody's butt. And I think in a tempo offense, that's smart on the offensive line. And that's really when you look back at Baylor, they really did a great job of that because you thought about Baylor and you thought this flashy, futuristic offense. They score a bunch of points, RG3, you know, whoever. And they'd really line up and run it all over you and blow you off the ball many times. And that's kind of a little secret, you know, that people say. I'm not excited. Now, look. It's the SEC, right? Blowing off the ball, I don't know, you know. But you look at what they kind of their style, and it seems to be, you know, an aggressive, creative, and fun thing for the offensive line if you like to go out there and mix it up, which most of them do and or should. Look at Arkansas when Kendall Briles was there. It was a situation where that offense – up front was not just good, it was great. I mean, it was one of the best in the SEC. Now, the year that, I guess 22, they had some injuries. KJ Jefferson got hurt, and injuries up front. They didn't have a lot of, they didn't have the receivers, so they replaced him with a, I think it was Fortin that they replaced him with, kind of a passing quarterback. And their offense struggled down the stretch, and I think they went 7-6. But started off really well. You remember that team that beat the Gamecocks that day. Two defensive players, Mo Cabba and Jordan Strong, both out for the year. Very physical game. And so that's kind of the idea. I'm not saying – I certainly don't think you can just – with what – with how they ran KJ at Arkansas, I don't know that you can necessarily Lenoris is identical other than they're big. I've said that for a long time. People wanted to compare the two. I'm not buying that. I think Lenoris is a better passer. I think they have better receivers. But I also think that he's a different style of runner. You know, he's a guy that is elusive in the open field, has great acceleration. He's just the same size as KJ was more of a downhill power runner, maybe a, you know, a taller, bigger version of a Tim Tebow running style wise. But they had a Rocket on that team as well. I don't know that Carolina has a Rocket Sanders in the backfield, but, you know, because Rocket's special and rare. But they do have some good backs, and people have talked about them. Kendall Browse said the other day he likes the room a lot, and they're deep. And I think discerning separation in that room is going to be a challenge for Stan Drayton because, you know he's there every day, so that's good. I'm not. But when you look at everybody kind of on paper and track record, they're all very similar at running back. But anyway, that offensive line at Arkansas, back to that, was we talked about it. It was good, and then they gave lots of teams trouble until injuries and stuff like that. Sam Pittman kind of put that thing together with Kendall Browse, and we know Pittman's history on the offensive line, one of the best to ever do it. But Randy Clements is here now, and he's had a long history with Browse, and Browse is certainly comfortable with him. That's important. And so we'll see what they can do. I'm not predicting that this offensive line is going to be like that or maybe close. Until they go out there and play, there's a lot of mystery. And that's unsettling because, you know, you've seen the offensive line kind of be the slow leak in the ship that ends up sinking it, you know, at times through the years. But so it's Seth Smith, left tackle, Hank Purvis, left guard, Carter Miller at center, right guard. This will come as no surprise. Shout out to Jamie Bradford. Shout out to a lot of my sources behind the scenes around the Carolinas that talked this kid up. And again, I don't know if he'll start. I mean, this may just be group A, 1A, and then 1B is really the starting. I don't know. I think some of these guys will start. Kojo Poku, the East Carolina transfer, is at right guard, 6'5", 320. Great story. Came, family, was born in New York. Family moved to Ghana in Africa for a while. Then he came back, settled in Charlotte. I think he was a lacrosse player, walked on at East Carolina, just got bigger and bigger and better and better. Played some tackle, but he's at right guard. I think that's where he really shined at ECU. And so I like that, you know, I like the interior here. And he's also very physical player, and athletic. So he's at the right guard spot, 6'5", 320, and then right tackle Shed Surratt. And I was pretty sure I knew they were going to keep him out there. Really since they actually knew. And by the way, I put this on X that the staff knew that Josiah wasn't going to be there since December. They weren't counting on him. They put the portal class, and I was told it was BS on X by some of these folks out there, one of these folks out there. Well, Beamer said it again with Connor O'Gara, because O'Gara asked him about, this, and he's like, look, that was news because it was news, the news aspect. He's like, but we knew about it in December. You know, so right, wrong, indifferent. This doesn't mean the offensive line's good. Oh, they're okay now. You know, it doesn't mean that Josiah, a healthy and good Josiah Thompson, couldn't have helped them this year. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that that was not something that popped up. It wasn't a here we go again. As far as the internally goes, it was a here we go again out here. And people are just mistaken. I wish people would believe me on that. And you know, I have no reason to just spin it. But they knew about that. I mean, they knew he wasn't, you know, he was in the portal while they were putting it together. So, I mean, of course not. But Shedd Surratt started the last three games at right tackle. I thought he held his own. You know, I thought against Clemson in particular and against A&M too. I mean, he was fine. It wasn't him when you had leaky offensive line play. Josiah really struggled in that game. And Surratt was a true freshman. He's from Gaffney. He's a player that he has NFL written all over him. You know, just the athleticism and 6'4". You know, he's slimmed down. I think he's down about 325. Just quick hands, great feet. A buddy of mine in scouting saw him dunk a basketball flat-footed. So this guy, you know, he's one of the ones that, like, hey, you want to hold on to him. And trust me, there are some portal sniffers out there when it came to Shedd Surratt. And South Carolina's good to have him back, you know, from Gaffney, South Carolina. Interesting geographic balance here. You got left tackle from Arizona, left guard from Kansas, center from Tennessee, right guard from North Carolina, and right tackle from South Carolina, if you kind of break that down. But you don't know, you know, guys are going to go up, guys are going to go down, guys are going to get injured. This is just practice four, right? But I did think, you know, the reason I even bring it up, it's not breaking news or anything like that. Well, it is kind of breaking news, but it's just info, right? It's a sign. Show me a sign. And I like this group, you know, as far as the individuals. We'll see how they play collectively. And they'll continue to get ready and all that as we move forward with everything. Thinking about the receivers, just this morning, really, and based on a couple of conversations that I've had recently, Nitro Tuggle, folks, you know, when you have a guy that comes in that was a highly rated recruit and it's the third school, and they loved him at Georgia. They thought he had a big upside. He left for a lot of reasons, went back closer to home at Purdue. But when he catches 34 passes in a year, that's kind of similar. And my whole thing about the receiver room for 2026 is it's time for production. And that's not a, oh, well, you got to step it up. That's not it. Of course, everybody needs to get better and develop, and there's a bunch of young players in that room. It's more of a, okay, maybe the scheme was holding you back, maybe an inexperienced quarterback in 24. Of course, most of these guys weren't here in 24, but the scheme was, I think, probably holding them back. A lot of times receivers were open. Lenore's either missed them or he's in the process of running for his life. A lot of times they wouldn't, there was the middle of the field was wide open and there wasn't a receiver running across. So I don't know what that was. So a lot went into, hey, Carolina's lucky to have a receiver catch 30 passes in a year, last 2 years, and different reasons in both years. This year, with this system, you look at the history of Kendall Browse again, even at Arkansas, you know, it's one receiver, two receivers, three receivers. Browse does like guys in certain positions. In other words, some guys could get cross-trained, but he has like the big guy, the X or whatever. You know, they're distinct slot, whatever. And I think that makes it easier to learn. But Nitro Tuggle, back to him, you know, when the guy only has 34 catches and, you know, his name is a big name, but you're like, well, you know, I like what he did on film, but why was there no consistency? Well, Purdue was not that good. Probably was part of it. But I think that in year three, in a new environment with Coach Furry, you know, that all that potential that he has, I think that when you hear about Nitro Tuggle because his name and stuff and kind of the hype around him, you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be good. Well, then you kind of start to doubt it a little bit. Well, I don't know, you know, maybe it's just a name. But if his name was Seth Smith and the left tackle's name was Nitro Tuggle, by the way, that's a terrific name for a left tackle. That's a terrific name regardless. Maybe we're not talking about Seth Smith as much, but you just keep an eye on him. I'm sitting there thinking of a world where, when you talk about production and you talk about a three receiver set, four receiver, three receivers, we'll go with Nick Harbor, Nitro Tuggle, and Pup Sellers. I mean, those guys, I think, are all capable of producing. Nick and Nitro probably could stand to be better numbers wise, obviously. There's probably reasons for that. Jaden only played half the year and caught a bunch of passes. So I think that, I don't know. If you're just kind of circling three receivers that you want to, if you want to do a projected depth chart, I'd circle those guys. I really would. The other day it was kind of Kendall Bryles kind of gave away the quarterback depth chart, which is fine. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, but I did want to point out Cutter Woods clearly the number two guy, and I think that based on again intel and feedback, don't sleep on Cutter Woods. As far as next year goes, I know Landon Duckworth's there. He's a special player. Landon Duckworth could pass him and start. I mean, there's no question. It's 2027. I hate to even talk about it. But what I've heard is Cutter was really good as a freshman, advanced, high floor, but that he's gotten even better and that Kendall Bryles really likes him. And I think this year, because you always have to talk about the what ifs, right? If it's, Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction, pondering the what ifs, or if it's Raymond Reddington in The Blacklist, preparing for all contingencies, right? I feel much better about the backup quarterback situation this year than I did last year. And that's nothing against Luke Doty. He got out there, had to play half a game, and offense was turnover machine. Wasn't all on him, but I think that Cutter really has a lot of it, and so I think that God forbid Lenoris has to come out of a game. I feel much more confident about that, and in this system too, just knowing the West Side system. Brian Lane, the head coach there, was at Burns when I was there, so it's the old Bobby Bentley Burns system, but Brian's modified it or whatever. Knowing that system and Kendall Brown's system, I think this is like a, this is going to be good for Cutter Woods. Just keep an eye on that guy. Hopefully, you don't have to keep an eye on him during games unless Carolina's blowing somebody out this year. But the last 2 years, the facts are, there's Lenoris's first 2 seasons as a starter. He's had to miss some time, but be it, the concussion, or I don't know, it was a concussion, but I guess it was. I mean, he didn't play the second half against Vandy this past year, or whether that's the time he missed LSU, Kentucky LSU-ish, on up to Ole Miss in 2024. But yeah, I think Sellers' backup situation is pretty good. And then Lucian Anderson, who they got in here from depth from Bowling Green, he was a backup there, an older guy, and Landon Duckworth as well. Bryles had some good things to say about him, that he's picking up things well and stuff like that. And in this system too, pro guys tend to just kind of want to go by their depth chart and stuff, and then they'll play multiple players and stuff based on formation sometimes, and sometimes they don't. But Bryles is the type of guy, if you look at his history, that if you he's got a way to use you, it doesn't matter who you are, he'll put it in. He's kind of, I like that about him. Well, shoot, if it works, do it. That's kind of Steve Spurrier. Shoot, if it works, do it. Anyway, so wanted to go through all that with you. Spring practice rolls on, obviously. I believe they have their coaching clinic this weekend. Is that this weekend? Mike Gundy coming in. Come after me. I'm 40. I'm a man. And all that good stuff. And they'll have some scrimmages coming up. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but we'll get to all that tomorrow. All right. Don't forget the morning show coming up with Sports Media JB. That's his Twitter handle. Get in the bracket challenge. Matt Smith is in. Alex Jones of Smorgasbord. Sports Talk streams tonight on the Chief Sports app. Please go check out before March Madness tips off the late night Gamecock show bracketology. And I don't think you'll be disappointed following Matt and company's advice on that. All right. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you have a wonderful Thursday, folks. Thanks for listening. And we will holla.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.